Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Education Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil. Go to my website, TotalTutor.org, to find out more information on the Total Education Network. Now we're syndicated on 80-plus stations. Things are just picking up this summer. We're hot and heavy. Awesome education talk. So many networks are now picking us up 5 to 7 days a week. If you are not getting us 5 to 7 days a week, you have to call your local radio station. Say, we want the Total Education Network. But the first guest I want to welcome to the program, again, these are the fantastic educators, Dr. Philip Dembo. Dr. Philip, thanks for calling.
Well, thank you. It's great to be on your show again, Neil. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's always an honor, and I'm really excited about our conversation tonight because it involves gender differences in education. And I don't know if we're going to meet in agreement on this because, again, I have gone through seeing some experts in this specific area. But I think ultimately one thing that's missing, and then I know you're going to go with the flow, is basically the one thing that's missing is we have to teach kids differently and that you cannot expect to teach everyone the same way. Don't you agree?
Well, I do agree with that. I think that we can't look at everybody the same way. But I also think that in today's world, what we have to do is we have to make sure that we are educating to the right characteristics. And sometimes gender is only a small piece of what we really as educators and the educational system needs to really be focused on. We need to be focused, I think, on more specific elements of the human condition in terms of intention to be a good student and really where somebody's capacity is to what they want to do with themselves.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you, but I kind of, I guess I'll pinpoint your expertise in this specific area in ways, but you're right. We got to really look at, I believe in education, we need to look at individually at each individual student differently. You could have a girl, two girls, and one girl is going to learn totally different than that other girl. So, I mean, it's good to look at this specific area, but we can't jump to conclusions because I think one of the things we need to do in education, Dr. Philip, to change it is to really individualize. We're the United States. We have the capacity and the ability with free public education to educate everyone if we do it right. If we decide to invest in education and try to do individualized instruction, allowing teachers to really have the ability to work individually with students and then look at their individual needs, I think we'll be in much better shape.
Absolutely. I think that if we could redirect the funding, because you know what it comes down to in our country is where are they going to put the resources, what do they cut, what do they keep, and oftentimes when they make the programming on a global level, what our listeners need to understand is that they don't really know how to create an equation that allows the resources to be individualized for each student or for each characteristic of students. So they generalize into these categories, like gender. Boys are a certain way, girls are a certain way. You know, it's still really quite true that if you actually talk to some of the principals and educators and administrators out there, they see boys as being less academic than girls in general, and girls liking to read more than boys like to read. But in today's world, that really isn't the case because parents are getting it. They're raising their kids based on the characteristics and the strengths and weaknesses of their child rather than just on gender.
Okay, we're talking to Dr. Philip Dembo, and I agree with you, but I think that ultimately through my research, and this will be, again, we'll go back to the gender differences. We both agree with individualized education. Maybe we got to bring you back to have a conversation like that or maybe a roundtable discussion on one of my other nationally syndicated shows to talk about that. I mean, internationally syndicated because we are now on in the UK as well, Dr. Philip, so it's really cool to have that. We keep growing each new station, and we're excited, but specifically enough, when we're looking at this, I don't know if I agree, and I want to kind of get where you're getting this. I don't think we're raising them to do this, but a lot of times boys are being left behind in school, and that's one of my concerns. You're not seeing that?
Well, I am seeing that, but what I'm saying is that people accept that because they say that boys are less academic. There's more resources that will go into a football program, a men's or boys football program,
yes,
even on a middle school and high school level, than encouraging boys to read, encouraging boys that it's masculine, that it's a healthy part of being a male is learning to be able to articulate and do math and do, you know, social studies and be part of the arts and all of that. It is often still that stereotype. So when you look at that, for me at least, my fear is unless we start redirecting our priorities in a family setting and then advocate on a academic setting, that boys and girls need to be looked at not by their gender but by their interest level and by their need for skill building. When you do that, it's a whole different game.
Exactly. So what you're thinking in this situation is that people see boys and say, well, they're expected to do this just because that's what's happening in their academic setting. We're just going to kind of label them. They're a boy. That's why they're doing it.
Absolutely. We look at boys today that are running around, and if we don't label them ADD at a young age, we're like, well, he's just a boy. Well, you know, when you start putting people in gender stereotypes and then you justify who they are without trying to help them develop and encourage them to really develop all facets of themselves, you know, to me, this is a bigger societal issue. Because when a four-year-old's running around a restaurant and he's just a boy and a little girl is sitting at the table,
right,
and is expected to because she's a little girl, and when you have those kind of stereotypes, now add that into the academic and the school setting, starting in kindergarten and pre-K and going up, you have a problem because we have to stop looking at it that way. What we want to start looking at is that little boy has the same capacity to sit still or to do the same academic process at whatever individual's, you know, pace they need to go and whatever support that they need individually. But we have to stop justifying it because they're a little boy or she's a little girl and see it in that way, because it boxes them in and there's no motivation for them to step out of that.
Yes, and that's true. And I wonder why that is. That's a concern I have, is why is that the case? Why is that the case? I keep hearing, okay, Dr. Philip, I have three little girls, and my wife's expecting August 15th, and everyone's saying, oh, thank you. I'm excited about that. But the one problem is everyone says, oh, if you get a boy, look out. Your life's going to change dramatically. Why is that? Why do we have those stereotypes?
Well, I think because we justify the aggression in boys by their gender rather than by the societal elements that are around there. Boys gravitate to more aggressive, typically. I mean, we're talking very generally here.
Right.
But we still have it. We won't say it, but we it's cool for a boy to play guns, and it's cool for a boy to be in sports, and it's really pretty for a girl to do ballet and to do those kinds of things. And everybody seems to still want their child to fit into what everybody else is, you see. But our society is changing. I mean, we have all kinds of kids out there, and we have boys who want to dance, and we have boys who want to do all kinds of things. But there's still that societal global element that says, he's not masculine enough if he's interested in doing those kinds of things. Last night I was out to dinner with some friends of ours. Linda and I were out to dinner, and this woman has three boys. And so one boy is the high school football star, and the other boy is an entrepreneur, and he's out of college now, and he's out, and he's very, very creative and doing his thing. And then the middle child is this kid who is brilliant, and he's doing some solar paneling, something, he's creating something at age 20, but she's worried about him. He's not as social. He's not as aggressive. He doesn't play sports. And it's interesting listening to parents talk about pigeonholing their children into categories rather than celebrating the specifics of who these people are. This kid's an amazing, brilliant kid, loves to read, loves academics, and told his mom, I don't want to go out and party with everybody else. I'd much rather stay home with a book. She thinks something's wrong with him because of that. That's the kind of myth that we have to break in order for us to really advocate. We're never going to get the government and the school systems to see it differently if we don't get the family culture to see it differently.
Definitely. And I, and what you're saying from your research is it's because of environment we're seeing these differences a lot. Because if we would kind of look at things in a specific way that, you know, just because they're a boy, they're this or that, allow them to explore for themselves. And I think, Dr. Phillip, it's because if they're considered different, then that's going to be a big societal ill that we're going to be kind of looked at, right?
Absolutely. If we can develop, as you said, entering into our conversation, if we could develop programming that is individual-based, so what that means would be is that we're looking at the strengths and the interests and the skills necessary for each individual to thrive and shine. You may read at a different rate than I read. I may have some learning difficulties that maybe disallow me to go at the same pace that you go at, that isn't gender related. But if we can allow for me to go at my pace and you to go at your pace, still with the same goal of building those skills, we are going to get each of us to be motivated to develop ourselves. When I'm supposed to go at the same rate as you go, but I can't because of my learning disabilities, or I can't because I'm not really as interested in it as you are, I'm taught that it's failure. I'm taught that there's something wrong with me. And when we do that to kids, the kids begin to avoid the academics rather than embracing the academics. And boys, more than girls, typically begin to do that because we then say, well, he's just a boy.
Right.
Give him a mitt, give him a football, let him dribble a basketball, and cultivate those skills in him. And that's my point, is that if you take that judgment out of it, and if you can add in the programming that really excites each one of us to actually be the best we can be, and that's not a cliche because we're on the radio, to really be the best that I can be. You know, when you work with people, as many people over 32 years as I have, and you work with parents, not every kid's going to be president of a company, and not every kid's going to be Hank Aaron or Alex Rodriguez. I want the guy who is the assistant manager at the Denny's where I go for my breakfast to be as capable and as educated and as, you know, well thought of within himself, a full self-esteem as anybody who's running a Fortune 500 company. And that's a part of the educational system to me, Neil.
And that's sanctifying your work, making sure you do your very best at what you do. You do your best job possible at work. And regardless of what job you have, you're doing it to the best of your ability. If you're not doing it to your best of your ability, and that means that we can't look and say, oh, you're a disappointment just because you're doing this. And that's so true, Dr. Phillip. It's meaning that we're going to go ahead and make sure that they are doing that. We form kids individually so that they do the very best they can. And say, okay, that's, you did your very best. We're not going to call you a failure now. But if you're not doing your very best, then there's a problem.
Well, and to me, here's the trick. Now we need programming that says, I'm going to teach you to be the very best in the things you don't really love. Because we all have that in our life. We sit down twice a month and do our bills. We have to cut our lawn. We have to deal with things every single day as adults that we should be very, very good at. But that we should be very, very good at, but that we don't necessarily want to do. And that is an individual thing. I may love to read and I may hate to do math, but I should have the educational programming that really teaches me that it's not the math I should resist. I should embrace it, be the best I can be, and even if the grade I get is a C, and this is what we really have to take a look at, even if my very best is average in the comparison to everybody else in the class, I want that kid to feel good about themselves.
All right.
And we don't do that.
Definitely. All right, Dr. Philip, where can we find more information on you, purchase your book, and learn more about you?
Absolutely. The book is called The Real Purpose of Parenting, the book you wish your parents read. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or any bookstore out there. You can reach me with questions or just check me out at CoachingLifeStrategies.com.
All right. Well, thanks again for calling the program, Dr. Philip. We'll definitely have you back on. We're thinking of some good ideas from our conversation where we can go next. So thanks for calling.
Thank you, and I'll talk to you soon, Neil.
All right, take care. All right, that was Dr. Philip. Bye-bye. That was Dr. Philip Dembo. You're listening to Total Education Show on the Total Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. That we are the number one education talk show in the world because we're all over the world, 180 countries, many different internet and terrestrial radio stations all over the world, and they're here to listen to us. But I want to welcome the program my co-host, Jarrett. Jarrett, how are you?
I'm good. Wow, Neil, you're really putting the pressure on me to come up with some good solutions to the problems that we're facing with families and the challenges we're facing with families and in the educational system.
Exactly. And I think what we're going to learn from this whole process, Jarrett, is that it's an amazement. It's an amazing thing that we're going to really make this more international, looking forward to really reaching out in the UK to specific guests and then looking at other countries as well. Maybe someone will finally kind of maybe can, so we can go to countries that do not have the English language that could broadcast what we're talking about in education, because we speak to the audiences of children, which children are the most important thing in our future, and we have to make sure that we can help them. Well, today I thought, you know, a conversation's been coming up about college or no college, Jarrett, and I know you're passionate about this, and this section I want to be in our part of our book, especially the college and adult part of our parenting section of our cookbook that'll be coming out hopefully in September or October. And I thought this is a perfect topic for us to talk about today. And this involves the whole situation about how, as parents, we can make sure our kids are prepared to either go to college, and this is a controversy, or a trade school. What recommendations would you give parents, especially when they're in high school, to do this, Jarrett? Because I think a lot of times we've been hearing other experts and they're all different ways and saying, oh, you know what, maybe college isn't the right place. Well, I think that they can go, that we have to set our bar high for these kids.
Well, you know, and this is a controversial topic, and we know that this is an issue that's been raised by politicians. It's an issue that has, you know, really faced a lot of scrutiny. You know, the audience knows that I'm a parent of a five-year-old, and, you know, quite honestly, my dream is for him to go to college. And in fact, we participate in a college fund. You know, the positive side of this is that at any point, someone can return to college. You know, even at my advanced age into my 40s, you know, I have returned to college on several occasions, sometimes just to take professional development classes. And this latest time was to pursue an advanced degree through one of the universities within the Pittsburgh area that we live in. You know, so, and this was, you know, me heading back to school was 15 years after I had finished my master's degree to pursue an additional advanced degree. So, you know, first what I want to say to our listeners and our audience is that even should your child determine that they're looking at the vocational area, the trade school training, at any point that person can attend college. You know, there's many examples of people well into their 70s, 80 years of age that are finishing college that they started half a century ago. You know, so to take out the passionate side of this argument, the opportunity can be there for anyone.
And what we want is tips for this. And I know that you are passionate, and I'm definitely going to put this in the book about that understanding. And that's where I really draw the line against Democrats, Republicans that finally say, not all kids can go to college. Well, that's not true, but we have to set the bar high for everyone. And it really led to a huge argument on the Total Education News Show. I had a conversation. I've had a few arguments on this whole fact, but let's go right to some steps parents can do in high school to make sure that their kids will after graduating high school, go on to some sort of schooling.
And that's actually the important part here that you just raised, because what we do know that, first of all, graduating from high school is the key to being able to get a decent start, a good start in life. Secondly is pursuing a degree after the graduation of high school, and that degree can include trade schools. In fact, many trade schools now are accredited associate degree programs. Some of the trade schools or the schools that we saw as vocational schools are now actually accredited four-year college programs. Times are changing, too, and we're recognizing I think that was one of the first steps, is recognizing the importance of a trade school as valued educational learning and advanced learning. And that, I think, is also the step that we need to look at. I don't think there needs to be this set line where we are saying that this is what a college can be or only can be. The idea of learning beyond high school is something that prepares us for our entrance into adulthood, whether that is truck driving academy or plumbing school or any of the trade schools that are in drafting or computer design. Those things are significant. First tip that I have for parents is try to identify with your child, if they'll let you when they're in high school, try to identify what their interest is. Is it, or to put it another way, what their talent is, whether it seems that talent is a natural gift or something that they've cultivated. Pay attention to that.
And I completely agree. We have to look at what their talents are. And this is what I wish teachers would do, Jared, is that they would look at each individual child and say, this is their strength. We need to build on that strength. And as parents, honestly, I already see that Ava is more brilliant than Anastasia in certain things, but I see Anastasia as very good in something else. Why is it that we always compare apples to oranges? Let's look at specifically each individual and their strengths and focus on those and really kind of encourage them throughout that process in high school.
Right. You nailed it with what you said. It needs to be first, or maybe not first, but it needs to be in the home and in the school system. So parents, be aware, pay attention to what your children are doing, even at some of the earliest ages, whether they gravitate to the arts or gravitate towards the sciences, or even gravitate towards kind of the hands-on learning approach. Do they like to take things apart and put them back together again? That might be one of the key talents for a child who is very interested in computer technology and maybe not necessarily within the university system. They might be looking for a more hands-on approach to it. Paying attention to what your child has an interest in and then cultivating that interest, encouraging your child. When they're young, just a simple kind of statement of, wow, I really like what you're doing over there. When they get older, maybe you're taking them to actual outings or, almost family field trips where they get a really good look at what this is all about. One of the best examples I can give is one within my own family where, I had a cousin who absolutely was certain he wanted to be an auto mechanic. He loved cars, loved everything about it. His dad took him, wanted to cultivate that. Took him to a garage, let him see how it worked, and after he saw the garage and everything that was included with it, had decided that there was no way he wanted to be an auto mechanic. Still had the love of cars, but that was not his father's intention, by the way. His father's intention was thinking that his child would see this and really be interested in it. But what it did do is let that parent know, okay, there's an interest here, but that's not where his passion is. And instead, my cousin began to look at some other trade schools and now has a very good living as a plumber. And he's a very high-skilled plumber.
And that's what we have to do. is ultimately, I don't like the fact that say, hey, there's going to be ditch diggers out there, and or there are always going to be the haves and have nots. I think that's the one problem. American exceptionalism, which I don't know if you're a huge fan, Jared, but honestly, is the bottom line is that anyone in this country can be successful. And that if we pigeonhole them that, you know what, this is all you can do. And I know a lot of guidance counselors out there, they tell the kids that. It's horrible because you have no idea when that motivation comes. As you said, some people going on to their PhDs at 60, some going on to become doctors at 70. You have no idea where people are going to go. And if you decide for them instead of letting them decide for themselves, I think that that is the problem. So, Jared, so basically kind of looking at those situations where focusing on their interests, allowing them to have that opportunity, and to really cultivate that and to encourage that is the key in this whole situation, it sounds like.
Well, that is, again, what you had just mentioned, Neil. I totally embrace the idea of American exceptionalism. Part of that exceptionalism that we have is that freedom of choice. You know, don't saddle, you know, again, one of the best pieces of advice I can give to parents and that are listeners to the show is don't saddle your child with limits. Allow them to broaden their horizons. You know, look at the interests that they have. Encourage that. You know, I mean, let's face it. Many times we pursue a dream and we find out that it's not actually the dream that we wanted. So it's okay if your child starts to go down a path and then decides, you know what, this really isn't for me. You know, that's what we're there for as parents, is to guide them. Even with children who are older, who, you know, when they reach the teenage years, do not necessarily seem like they embrace parental guidance, but it still is necessary, and your child will thank you for that interest and you know, kind of the recognition of, hey, we're here to support you, to guide you, but, you know, if we don't think it's a good choice, but ultimately it will be your choice.
Exactly. And I think that's the key. And if I would offer advice in this, and especially because I know that could get in the book, especially when I'm the editor, that I look at it specifically that if we are not going to kind of form them for a career, if we don't look at career placement for these for the students, it's a terrible thing. And if we pigeonhole them that, oh, they're all they're going to do is be an auto mechanic, well, it's just not a problem. But we don't want them to develop mathematical skills so they can run an auto mechanic shop. We're really hurting them, and that's the key.
That's exactly right. And here we go back to the classroom and the school district and the school system. That school system needs to have many opportunities in place. You know, I look around our country and I see the elimination of first word, the eliminating the arts programs, but, you know, it's going all the way down to the vocational training programs. You know, those things are, I think, critical to the development of the entire student population. Here's what I want to stress to parents. Just because your child does not go to college when they're 18 does not mean they're not going to go to college. And if we're taking the approach within the school system of saying only the academic track, only the university track is what is important, we have limited the freedom of our student body. We have limited the freedom that students have because we've taken away opportunities. And that's really what public education is about, is expanding opportunities, or at least providing opportunities.
Exactly. Well, Jared, again, to find more information on you, just got to listen to me every day and listen to you and find all that. You can go to TotalTutor.org, look up Jared. What's really cool is once you go to the Total Education area, you can kind of search and find specific shows, especially the Total Education show, the 30-minute show. That's where you're going to find Jared most of the time.